Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, we are live. The debate just finished. Well, I guess it's just finished. There were a few fireworks that that I saw. There was a lot of back and forth. It was good to see some jabs being thrown. And to me, I certainly can't pick a winners or losers, anything like that. I didn't get to watch enough of it because I was getting prepared for this program tonight on the Duke Machado Show. We have our very special guest, Texas State Republican Chairman Tom Meckler. He's with us tonight, and we are going to be talking about what it takes to keep Texas red. We're going to talk about what the Democrats are doing here in Texas, and also, you know, Texas is going to play a bigger role in the primaries this year. There's some changes that were made, and I want to talk to him about that. And, of course, just get to know our state chairman, Tom Meckler. How you doing tonight, sir?
Hey, Duke, it's great to be on your show tonight. Top of the day to you and also your listeners. I appreciate everybody that's tuned in this evening, and it's a pleasure for me to be on with you.
Well, I can tell you, I was at our convention. If those people who aren't familiar with the Texas convention, it's huge. Our Republican convention is just a first-class operation, and there are a lot of Republicans that show up. And you ran for chairman, I guess that was 2014?
I ran in 2010. 2010. Steve and I, my predecessor, and good friend, I didn't actually know him in 2010 when I was running for state chairman, but he also ran, and we ended up doing these candidate forums all over the state of Texas and actually became friends on the campaign trail. And then at the state convention, whenever I, in the SD caucuses, came in third based on the number of delegates, I basically decided that it was best to step out of that race and not put the delegates through a floor fight. And so that left the incumbent, Steve. And so then I threw my support to Steve in front of the convention. And after it was over, congratulated him and said, "Congratulations, Mr. Chairman. I wish you the best." And he said, "Wait a minute, where are you going?" He says, "I need your help." And then he says, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "Well, my passion is minority engagement." He goes, "Well, I've got somebody that has already agreed to do that for the party." So he says, "Would you be my treasurer?" And the FEC reports were messed up. And he said, I really need some help at trying to get this regulatory reporting back in line with respect to getting the FEC, TEC reports and all that, so Federal Election Commission, Texas Ethics Commission reports. And so then I became his treasurer and did it until he stepped down, of course, to go to work for Rand Paul's campaign. And then I ran at the March 7th SREC meeting, was elected to fulfill his unexpired term. And so I will be, I'm fulfilling that and need to run at the convention for the chairman's job. So that's where we're at right now.
Well, I can tell you, having watched how you work and communicate with SREC, the State Republican Executive Committee, it seems like, well, it doesn't seem like, it's definitely, you have a demeanor about you that is easy to talk to. You're an easy communicator. I'm sure that's why the state party is continuing to do well here in Texas. But, you know, across the country, I don't know that all the other states, I know that I have friends of mine politically who, boy, they get all kinds of resistance when they start talking about minority engagement and outreach. You say that was your passion. Tell me why.
Well, you know, I'll give you a couple of my viewpoints that I have as to why it's so important to me. I'm a man of faith. I came to know Christ 40 years ago, and just when I was graduating from high school. And that's what shaped my relationship with the Lord, is what shaped my politics, and that's why I'm a conservative. But I also believe very strongly that the Lord did not concentrate intelligence in just one race. It's evenly distributed across all of mankind. I see that in God's Word, and I believe that very strongly, that universally across our society, there is tremendous potential and great intelligence. And, you know, I've always thought, you know, where is the key to unlock the potential in our minority communities? Because we know the potential is there, but it's not being realized. And so that's always been something that's been a draw to me toward minority communities, and trying in terms of helping them be successful, because they want the same thing that the Anglo community wants. I mean, they want good education for their children. They want economic opportunity. They want to be able to have good jobs and be successful and be independent of the government. They don't want to be on, to be tied to the government. They want to be able to be, entrepreneurs and to succeed. But in addition to that, from a political perspective, I will tell you that, you know, we just came off this amazing election victory in 2014 when Governor Abbott, of course it was candidate Abbott then, but beat Wendy Davis and did it so in such a complete election victory. It was overwhelming. And I think part of what happens is whenever you have that kind of a victory, as much as we all rejoice in it and we're grateful for it, for sure, but people can become complacent and say, well, the Democrats can never win in Texas. I mean, we have basically defeated them so soundly, and, you know, they're finished. But what we do know for sure is that if they're finished, they're still here. And there's an organization called Battleground Texas that basically was Obama's campaign team that came to Texas. And, you know, I just spoke to some college Republicans tonight in College Station. And, you know, I said to them something along the line of, so since they got defeated, why didn't they go home? Why are they still here? Well, the prize is big. The Texas is such a large state, but the Republican Party in Texas, in the state of Texas, is so important to ensure that we have a potential to win the White House. And we know, and they know, that if Texas turned blue and became a Democratic state, Republicans could never win the White House again. And that's based on the Electoral College and the way the votes fall out across the states.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they came to begin with, because they knew that potential was there. The reason they haven't gone, they haven't left, is in 2019, the voting age population in Texas will be majority-minority. And what they would tell us, if they were on this show, they would say to you and your audience, well, they're going to take over everything. Well, how can the Democrats think they're going to take over everything in Texas? And it really comes down to this. The minority communities historically have been strong Democrat communities, and they are growing more rapidly than the white community. And so their position is, because they are growing quicker and they are going to be the majority and they are more Democrat than they are Republican, it's just a matter of time, they believe, before they take over the politics and all the elected positions in Texas. It's our job as a state party to keep that from happening. And since I've been the state chairman, and I've told staff, this is the biggest issue, I would like our party to look like Texas. And I want our state convention to look like the state of Texas. So what does that mean? Well, as I've given 70 speeches since March 7th when I was elected, and I pretty much say something similar every time. And what that means to me as your state chairman, as a Republican state chairman, is that when I stand in front of that convention, I don't want to see just white faces. I want to see an ethnic mix across that platform, across that convention floor, that we have all different ethnic groups represented in our party, because that's really what Texas is. And when I speak to different clubs across the state, I say something like, what do we have to give up to bring the minority communities into the Republican Party? And the answer is, we don't have to give up anything, because the minority communities are at least and probably more conservative than the white community. They are already conservatives. We are the conservative party. We have not done a very good job of explaining that we represent the conservative values of the minority community. And so that's basically the approach that we're taking as a state party. We are going into those communities. We will contend for their support. And I think the Democrats have taken them for granted for far too long. And the battle's on. And they're a very, very important part of not just what we are doing today as a Republican Party, but the future of our party. The minority communities are a very significant portion of what our party is and should be in the future, and we're willing to pursue them.
Well, I think it's the right attitude. To me, though, it seems like that might get a lot of resistance maybe within our party, where people might actually call those almost like quotas. Are we trying to say that we need so many Hispanics, we need so many blacks, just because we're trying to mirror the state? They might say you're trying to put race quotas on the party. The event that I was at, when they were talking about mass deportations and getting everyone out of the country who's here illegally, I heard a bunch of cheers. It seems like the party on that particular issue is we have, like you say, what's the Christian approach? Can we inject Christian values in a solution on immigration?
Well, you know, I think you used the phrase a solution, immigration solution. And I think sometimes what we have is a lot of immigration rhetoric, which concerns me, because making statements doesn't actually necessarily entail finding a solution to solve a problem or an issue. And what do I mean by that? Well, people can say we ought to do mass deportation. Well, whether people think that or not, the reality has to be addressed. Is that even possible? And, you know, then you run into the question of whether it's smart or reasonable. But, you know, I personally believe it's impossible to do that. There is no way to do that. Do people go out and raise up, you know, so we tell everybody we're going to increase the budget by hundreds of billions of dollars for law enforcement, and then we're going to go door to door and try and find people that are here illegally? How would you ever do that? And how do you keep from becoming a Gestapo state, where people are knocking, you know, do we want law enforcement to break into people's houses and break the doors down? Of course not. We're not going to live like that as a society. And so, you know, candidates are, you know, they're running for office, and I understand the importance of it. You do too. You know, you've been around this political action for a long time, and people are saying things to gather support. Whether you talk about, you know, tax cuts or spurring the economy or immigration reform, or education reform, you know, the people that are running for office, I think the electorate needs to say, okay, well, are they offering a solution that's reasonable and even possible? And I don't think this issue is any different than that. That needs to be discussed and thoroughly vetted.
Well, I look forward to doing that at our next convention. Maybe in future shows we'll talk about that. Real quick, I'm going to shift gears on this. I've got someone in our chat room who's asking a question. I'm going to bring him in here. Caller, are you there?
I am here, Duke. It's me, Alex, calling from the great state of Massachusetts.
Alex, hey, you're on with the chairman here of the great state of Texas.
Chairman,
do you have a question
to talk
for him?
To you. Chairman, you know, you said a lot of great things on minority outreach, which is very important. And here in the People's Republic of Massachusetts, we have a party that's intransigent. Doesn't want to do anything. We had a state senator lost election, got killed in the urban areas. In Massachusetts, if you don't do well in urban areas as a Republican running statewide, you're going to get killed. What do you have to say to our party in order to win? To tell them, you know, you have to wake up and realize you need the Latino vote. What will you encourage somebody like me or others that are listening tonight, what we have to do?
Well, I think that the, you know, historically the Democratic Party has, I personally believe that they have taken the minority communities, the Latino community, for granted, and it's provided a bunch of lip service. One case in particular, I mean, one issue in particular is education. So you have a situation where the NEA, which is an important part of the Democrats' coalition, which, you know, is basically taking – we all value our teachers. The teachers are very, very important to educate our children. But the challenge is the teachers' union. It's not the teachers. It's the teachers' union. And what do they want? They want the status quo. They want everything to stay the same. And, you know, let's pour more and more money into education. That doesn't necessarily equate to better salaries for teachers, but in some cases it results in, you know, large amounts of money being fed to vendors who provide education equipment or maybe administrators and stuff like that. But what we do, I think we would all agree on, is the best way to provide economic opportunity to our children is to ensure that they have a solid education. And so the Republican Party's position, and I believe this also, is there ought to be school choice, especially in the urban areas, because if the children are attending a failing school, and I know, I'm not sure how Massachusetts has handled this, but in Texas we've had a situation where the Texas Education Agency can go in and close a school. Well, I'd submit to you that in reality the administrators of a failing school in an urban area, they know the TEA is not going to shut that school down. What's going to happen to those kids? They're going to put them on the street? No. And so they don't change anything. But I would submit that a capital solution, basically saying, okay, we're going to give those children a school choice. The parents are going to get a choice. They don't have to keep their children in a failing school. They're going to be able to put them in a private school that will give them the ability to succeed. Now, I personally think that should that happen, that opportunity exists in those urban areas, that those public schools probably aren't going to fail, not because they can't fail because they don't do something, but I think they'll say, well, the education agency closing them down is not going to happen, but they will believe that the threat is real when it comes, it's a serious threat to their existence when there's alternatives for these parents to move their children into successful schools. Then the dynamics shift, and I think that one or two things happen. Either they'll get their act together and they'll perform like those parents deserve for their children's education, or what will happen is they will go out of business and the private schools will fill in the gap. And, you know, the name of the game is these children have got to get a good education, and, you know, throwing money at failing schools doesn't cause a school to become successful. It just is a more expensive failing school, in my opinion.
Well, it seems like, if I could jump in here, you know, and I've talked to Alex before, and he's an activist there, and he's active in the party. But, you know, unlike here in Texas where, you know, the chairman's calling in on this program, having this discussion, he can't really get them on page to even consider reaching out to the minorities. It's almost like they feel like they're lost already.
Well, part of the problem, Chairman Melcher, is that, you know, you're reaching out to Duke, but if Duke was in Massachusetts and tried to do similar, under no circumstance would the chair reach out. I mean, you know, I know you have one of these shows in Spanish language TV in Texas. That's dominated here by the Democrats because our party refuses to reach out and not even acknowledge that one-third of the state is Hispanic. And we're getting killed in the urban centers because they all bought the philosophy that bought and owned by Democrats. And yet when you go to Florida and you go to Orlando, there's a large Massachusetts expat Hispanic community. Why they vote Republicans and elected people from up here down there as Republicans? It blows my mind.
Well, I can't speak to the leadership of the Republican Party in Massachusetts in terms of what they're doing. I can just tell you what we're doing in Texas. And
what you're doing in Texas, which is important. Because you're acknowledging that you have a minority community.
Yeah, and what I've told minority communities is, you know, I mean, the bottom line in the Republican Party of Texas, the minority communities have a place at the table. And, you know, in terms of messaging and how do we shape that and how do we connect with those communities, now, I look to the minority leaderships that are Republicans to help determine that and how to go forward. You know, it's a little bit, well, it's somewhat impossible for an Anglo guy like myself to think that I understand that the proper way to communicate with minority leaders and minority communities. I look to, well, we have three engagement directors. We have several field staff in Texas, but we have a Black engagement director, an Asian engagement director, and a Hispanic engagement director that are focused on connecting with those communities, and they advise me as to the proper way to interact with them. And the Black engagement director went to see the mayor of a large city in Texas, and when he sat down with this mayor, the mayor kind of chuckled and said, you know, that they and their spouse were talking the previous night, and they just knew that the Republican Party wanted to come talk with this mayor. They're going to send some white guy that was going to come in there and talk about how to fix all the problems. And here's our Black engagement director, who's Black, obviously, and why would we do anything different than that? The only thing that makes sense would be to do that. And they said, you've got my attention. I think maybe you guys are really serious about this. But if, you know, if this is going to get pulled together, you know, the bottom line is, you know, you've heard the saying, and I don't know if it's an Einstein quote or whatever, but people say that, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, the same way you've always done it, think you're going to get different results. Well, that's kind of what's happened with respect to the way that the Democrats are interacting with the minority communities. They're conservative communities. The Republican Party has the same values. But, you know, for us to reach in Texas, for us to reach out to the minority communities, puts them in play politically. The Democrats are going to have to step up their game, or they're going to lose these communities because we're going to pursue them. They're an important part of our future and as a party, and they belong at the table with the Republicans. And so, you know, game's on as far as I'm concerned as being the state chairman in the state of Texas with respect to those communities. And I want to make one comment. I want to make sure the listeners understand this, that this is so much bigger than just votes. This isn't just about getting votes. This is about empowering these minority communities to rise above their poverty that some of these communities are stuck, and to find a solution out of that. The solution doesn't come from the federal government sending them bigger checks, because that dependency doesn't make them free. All it does is keep people in greater bondage. It's enabling them and giving them the tools they need to rise above it and to be successful and to own businesses and to have employment. That's what it's about. If we really want to move our society forward, it's not just about getting votes from the minority community. It's about changing the face of our society and helping our whole society to be successful.
Well there you go, Alex.
He gave a great answer. He gave an answer I want to hear my chairman say. But Chairman Melcher, Duke has my info. Feel free. If there's any way I can do to help you, feel free to email me. Call me. Duke has my info. Texas is a state definitely that I'm looking at to get the heck out of this snowbound communist country. But well, you gave a great answer, and that's an answer that I think any chairman with a large minority population should give.
Awesome.
Well,
okay.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much for your comments.
Okay, so we've got just a few more minutes in this program. I just wanted to talk real briefly, and I hate to even touch on it because there's not enough time left. Number one, we're talking about our energy independence and why Texas has done so well. You know, we had a big boom here, and you know, it seems to be tapering off as fuel prices oil prices have gone down. Texas oil and gas, what's the new technology? Where's the future of energy? What are Republicans going to get behind as far as paving a new energy independence surge?
Well, I don't know if you know my background. I'm actually an oil and gas guy. I have undergrad engineering, a mechanical engineering degree. I've been in the oil industry since the 80s. I have a small operating company outside Amarillo, Amarillo, Texas, in the Texas Panhandle. And you know, I know that there's a tendency, and I'm not trying to correct you on what you're saying, but I think there's a tendency maybe because the media has done a relatively poor job of explaining to the general public, fracking is not something new. fracking has been around since the 40s and 50s. That's been around for a long, long time. It's been used successfully, you know, for decades. What is new, and George Mitchell, who is now deceased, but he actually is the one that developed the ability to use fracking in different types. Historically, it's been in limestone, and so now it's being used in a different type of reservoir. And that's what's new, is the application of an existing technology. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of fear out there. There's this fear factor that's been propagated, I think, maybe by the environmentalists, because they do not want any fossil fuels. And so how do you try and rein that in? You create the fear on the part of the population, saying, oh, my gosh, this terrible thing is going to happen. Regulations with respect to drilling, casing, cementing the casing in place, protecting the groundwater, that has been in place from the get-go. Now, some of those regs begin to be adjusted slightly, but the industry has always been intent on protecting groundwater supplies. The technology is, you know, there's a lot of expense in fracking wells. There's a lot of energy that's consumed by the equipment. You have to bring out a lot of pump trucks and, you know, additional equipment that has the components that's used in fracking. But it is not a dangerous, is absolutely not a dangerous process whatsoever. I've been around it my entire career. And so part of that's just something that has been put out there by the environmentalists to try and put people in fear. Bottom line is the market, it's market-driven. You know, the economy is, the Saudis have flooded the market with oil. I think they're at their peak operating capacity, and you've got price, you know, well, down in the mid-40s. And so the U.S. industry, and in Texas, you've seen rigs that are being stacked. The rig count's down by 50% from when the price of oil was $100. And so, you know, that supply is beginning to fall in the U.S. And, you know, it's global economics is what's driving this the price.
Is it possible to get off of forward oil? Is that a possibility?
Is it possible to get off of oil? Is that what you said?
Foreign oil.
Oh, well, I think we were on that path. The economics were there certainly to get us to that place where we were getting to back off. But this thing is now shifted because of the price, and you've got to be drilling these new wells that have been drilled all over the country. I mean, they have a pretty steep decline curve. What that means is they come on at a much higher rate, and they begin to decline, and then you've got to keep drilling new wells to keep that same level up. Mm-hmm. But since a lot of the rigs have been stacked, I don't think you're going to see us get away from imported oil. You know, I think it got down to as low as 20% of the U.S. consumption, but I think that that's probably going to start going back up now because so much of the industry is beginning to shut down the drilling rigs. You're not maintaining that same momentum.
Well, I know it's a big part of our industry here in Texas, a huge part of our success in the economy. But I'll give you the last few seconds here. To Hispanics, to minority voters, why the Republican Party?
Well, you know, I think, you know, it almost comes down to competition in some respect. And when you only got one game in town, like the Democrats with minority communities, then they've been taken advantage of. I mean, they've been taken for granted and taken advantage of. It's the future of our party, of the Republican Party in Texas, but I think maybe even across the nation. And just because the minority communities have voted Democrat in the past doesn't mean that the Republican Party isn't the right place for them to be, because I would submit that we do represent the values of those communities. They're great conservative communities, socially and fiscally, and we're going to contend for them. So we're moving on, and I hope that they'll hear us and listen to us.
Well, they have a place at the table, as you said, and I do appreciate you checking in with us tonight and giving us an update. Follow us on Facebook, The Duke Machado Show, and on Twitter, @DukeMachado1. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. God bless all of you.
Okay. Good night.